Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
It's so much more than just a profile picture. At Catholic Singles, our platform offers you many opportunities to get to know the person behind the picture. Sign up today at CatholicSingles.com.
Good morning, Ricardo.
Good morning, Philip.
How are you?
I'm fine.
Good.
You sound like a bit of a, you have a cold?
A little bit of a cold, yeah. The particular day we're recording, it's kind of rainy out, and I've got a little cold. But happy to be here to look at the upcoming Sunday Gospel.
Here we are, Two Guys and a Gospel. The one speaking now is Father Ricardo Martin. I'm the pastor at Sacred Heart Parish in Racine, Wisconsin, and also the Vice-Chancellor here in the Archdiocese.
And I'm Father Philip Bogacki. I'm the pastor at Christ King Parish and St. Bernard Parish in Wauwatosa, Wisconsin. And I'm the other guy. Where are we in the liturgical year now?
So we are getting to the end of the liturgical year. This is the month of November. This year, the first Sunday in Advent is December 1st. So we are going to be listening to Gospels reflecting on the end of times for that reason. It's the end of the liturgical year. We're still reading in this cycle Gospels from Luke. And this Sunday in particular, we are reading Luke chapter 21, 5 to 19.
While some people were speaking about how the temple was adorned with costly stones and votive offerings, Jesus said, "All that you see here, the days will come when there will not be left a stone upon another stone that will not be thrown down." Then they asked him, "Teacher, when will this happen? And what sign will there be when all these things are about to happen?" He answered, "See that you not be deceived, for many will come in my name, saying, 'I am he,' and 'the time has come.' Do not follow them. When you hear of wars and insurrections, do not be terrified, for such things must happen first, but it will not immediately be the end." Then he said to them, "Nation will rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom. There will be powerful earthquakes, famines, and plagues from place to place, and awesome sights and mighty signs will come from the sky. Before all this happens, however, they will seize and persecute you, they will hand you over to the synagogues and to prisons, and they will have you led before kings and governors because of my name. It will lead to your giving testimony. Remember, you are not to prepare your defense beforehand, for I myself shall give you a wisdom in speaking, that all your adversaries will be powerless to resist or refute. You will even be handed over by parents, brothers, relatives, and friends, and they will put some of you to death. You will be hated by all because of my name, but not a hair on your head will be destroyed. By your perseverance, you will secure your lives."
It's a complex gospel, and a fascinating one. Historically, we know that it's a reference to the falling of the temple, year 70, so that's why we think that Luke's gospel was written after that. The Romans, after, I believe, more than 100 years of trying to dialogue with the Jewish authorities, they lose patience in the end, and there is a destruction of the city, including or especially the temple, the great symbol of the Jewish religion and way of life.
And that's really important, by the way. I don't mean to interrupt you, but I think we should pause at that point. I think it's important just to pause for a moment to appreciate that historical reality of the temple being destroyed in 70 AD. So that would have been after Jesus had died and risen from the dead. But as you just pointed out, which I think is important to know, it did happen, though, in the lifetime, perhaps, of at least Luke, mm-hmm. and perhaps other of the gospel writers as mm-hmm. well. And what's interesting is to look at the context of the gospel writers is a little different as they reflect on that mm-hmm. and that connection to possibly the end of the world and the signs. But the destruction of the temple is a big deal, really, really big deal.
A huge deal, yeah. There is one scholar that I follow that claims that the whole enterprise of Luke's gospel is to explain to a rabbi what happened. Why did the temple fall? Why would somehow God abandoned or why God would allow something like this happen. This is like a September 11 for the Jewish people, to the point that the temple has not been rebuilt and the Wailing Wall is the only remain of the temple that is left from that historical event. But then it's very interesting how the gospel takes us to the experience of persecution of the beginning, and so many statements there that are shocking. Don't prepare your defense beforehand. They may do to your body many things, but not a hair will be touched. And how do we translate this experience? And it says also that members of your family will hand you to the civil and religious authorities. Mm-hmm. I think that explains or narrates describes the experience of persecution of the first Christians at the end of the first century, something like this.
Exactly. So I think that again, is really important. Here's a place where we need to appreciate, again, I overuse the word, but just the context in which mm-hmm. Luke is writing. They're seeing some of these things happen. And I think he's kind of almost like right in the middle of it to say, some of these things are happening. So when Jesus speaks about this, Luke has it in mind, and some of it is still to come, and you're kind of in the middle of it. It brings up the larger issue then of sort of the delay of the parousia or the, mm-hmm. the end of time. And again, the gospel writers would have a little bit different perspectives on that as they reflect on the destruction of the Jewish temple, mm-hmm. things that they were seeing and persecution. You know, there was a very real thought that Jesus would come again, the end of time would be really quickly, like in their lifetimes. Mm-hmm. And then as that goes on, it's just been interesting as Christians have reflected in different ways upon that. Is, you know, when is this going to come? And even doubts about whether it will come at all mm-hmm. was true in some of these very early Christians.
Even Paul shows a change of mind through his letters also. He thinks that's something imminent at the beginning, and then he realizes that it may belong to a more future poetic language. We exactly don't know. What I think we need to do as preachers this weekend is to take this experience of persecution and to bring it to our lives. It's one of the things that I often reflect. Our faith, at least in this country, doesn't set us in the course of experiencing something like that. Is it because we don't live our faith more deeply, or it's just that the historical context is completely different? But I tend to think about the history of the Catholic faith in the United States, for instance, that it was persecuted. It was Catholics were looked down by other groups for many years, and now we've just become, how do you say it in English? That happens on the stream, like...
Oh, mainstream.
Mainstream.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
Catholics
yeah.
now are mainstream. Our statistics do not reflect much of a difference from other groups, at least the... You know, the Catholicism understood this way. And I wonder if the moment that we are not a minority anymore, if we lose some of the authenticity of a persecuted movement.
That really is important to think about and a really valuable thought, because we certainly forget this as Westerners, as Americans, that sometimes the reality of the Catholic faith in other parts of the world. And there are parts of Africa, very, very sadly, in the Middle East in particular, parts of the Middle East, where you really, really risk your life to go to Mass.
Yeah.
And you are truly a minority, but the faith is so very vibrant. That's mm-hmm. where saints are made, particularly in Africa right now,
yeah.
where heroic holiness is brought forward. And it's the issue that, you know, in the most economically developed and prosperous parts of the world is where we forget about that, and our faith can become really beige and really bland and mainstream. That's a pretty good word.
Mm-hmm.
But look at other parts of the world, and some really incredible work happens. And I wonder if you have I think you've got a good point there. It's the reality of persecution and the fact that you've really got to think about it.
This gospel begins with the description of the temple with these ornaments and everything. How attached we are to the physicality of these buildings. I read something the other day, very, very interesting. There is a statistic that when a diocese decides to close a church, a parish, there is a statistic that says that it's much more possible for people to change religion if somebody else comes and uses the building than to stay Catholic and go to another building.
It's
I think Jesus is saying something about that also by, yes, we acknowledge this is the temple, this is the church, and we call it sacred, but we are not about brick and mortar, even though it takes so much of our time as priests.
Well, and you know, in the world of canon law, too, so when environments change and the reality changes, sometimes you need to change the structure of a parish. And that's one thing, you know, a parish, and that can be difficult for people to have a new, maybe legal or ecclesial structure. But the moment you say, and also we may need to close down this church building, mm-hmm. that's when the wars start. Yeah, there is this real attachment there. Some of it is healthy to say, hey, this is like a home to me, or maybe my family was part of this, but also, of course, something unhealthy when that happens too.
I'm not sure what I'm really going to preach this week. And I remember when a homily when I was younger about the temples that need to be destroyed so that we can grow up. But it was very, like, more like a metaphor of things that need to come down in our lives so that something new can grow. But I'm not sure about this Sunday.
I'm not sure either. I think it's always important to point out, at least for me, where we are in the liturgical year and saying, even though we're not quite in Advent yet, the readings are starting to put us into that trajectory to think about salvation history and just that reality, maybe to lay out the broad scope of salvation history. And I think the really important reality that we don't always think about is that there's, in a general sense, you've got the Old Testament, the New Testament, but we're living really what would be the third part of the Bible if it were continued to be written. So it's important to think about if someone writing a book about our life, about mm-hmm. our society, about where we're at, what would they observe? That's what we're reading here in Luke's Gospel and in all of the scriptures. And so how are we waiting? You know, how are we waiting for the second coming of Jesus, and what are we doing to get it right? Mm-hmm. I like, by the way, you saw me make a note. I like your idea of what temples need to be destroyed. Mm-hmm. That's an interesting thought. So if people are coming to my masses, they might hear a reflection on that.
We'll see that. Just a warning that we're recording in advance. Hopefully we are responsible preachers and we are not waiting for the Wednesday of the week that we are to elaborate a whole homily. But what about the idea of a crisis is being described in the gospel that affects the whole Jewish world as well as the communities of Christians? There is conflict, there is persecution. We cannot replicate that in our lives. But what would be the difference between living in crisis and persecution and this tension compared to the comfortable way in which we live our faith? What would look different? It may be an interesting source of ideas for a homily.
I think so. I'm on the same page with you as that. So, yeah, let's pray about that and think about that.
So should we meet again next Wednesday for the last time in this liturgical year?
That's right. It'll be
Christ
the end
King,
of the year.
Which is the advocation after which your parish is one of your parishes.
That's like the feast day for one of my parishes. So yeah, let's meet then and we'll chat.
See you there.
All right.
BreadBox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com.